You see, the mouse actually reaches all the way over. Mouse and keyboard.
How nice.
So, I do want a better table. One without the leg right there, but we don't actually have a lot of space.
I can try to find something online, something cheap.
Cheap.
You took it from me. I was going to do that.
Loud on this.
Oh, sorry.
Turn it down and start the video. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Daily Cup of Genre, the show where we try to be on daily, and we're going to hopefully be doing better going forward. It's brought to you by the fine folks over at Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. Check them out in the link from the link below. LRMonline.com, Genreverse.com, LRM's YouTube channel, and the LRM Genreverse podcast network, wherever you get your podcast from. We talk about anything and everything here on the Daily Cup of Genre, the Daily Cog, geek culture, pop culture, entertainment news, and business, entertainment, business. You'll love business. It's great.
The American way.
Yes, indeed. It is. What's that? Screw the British. It's the American way. Dang, Gonzo. Anyways, guys, if you don't know what that is, you've missed out on one of the greatest Christmas movies of all time. Please do go and check out The Muppets Christmas Carol, because that is just top notch. Michael Caine, Scrooge, that's yeah.
It's not Christmas without The Muppets.
It's not. Catching up, big holiday week last week. We did a couple of episodes, including a big interview with Jason Stewart, a stand-up comedian and filmmaker, actor. Go ahead and check that out from last Friday. We did Animeversal, Cantina, our Dragon reviewed The Wheel of Time. If you guys are watching The Wheel of Time, if you're enjoying that, especially if you're book readers, like you've read those books. We read books, just haven't read the Wheel of Time. And you're wanting to know what some people that haven't read the Wheel of Time are kind of, you know, feeling, reacting, and getting into the show. Check out the Dragon Reviewed podcast here on the Genreverse Podcast Network and LRM's YouTube channel. That's been going fun, but also a show that we're not reviewing, you and I just happen to like a lot, the Great. Been watching
yes,
that.
It's been amazing.
Season two.
We've been busy, so we haven't watched it all. The last episode, like, she hasn't given birth yet.
Nope.
That's where we're at. We know that she hasn't given birth yet.
She just had mental breakdown during the attempted Riku.
Yeah, they killed Shaky. That's where we're at. Yeah. So yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, it's good show though. I love the over-the-top satire on, you know, commenting on how the past was just the absolute worst. Thank you, Simon Whistler, for having that engraved in my mind forever as a phrase. But I also like how they take a lot of the true story and a lot of the true, like, stories that were told. Because after Peter died, like four or five Peters came forward to claim to be the real Peter, you know? The idea that he was kept locked up versus dying in 1762, I think it was, or 69. Nice. One of those 2 years, I can't remember which, but, that idea that he was locked up instead is what's kind of feeding this second season. So it's fun to see them using real history while at the same time playing around. Yeah.
Yeah. So. And I mean, it's just something about Russia where they like to do that, because there's been multiple people who have claimed to be Anastasia and the younger brother. I can't remember his name, but it's like they've discovered their bodies. So it's like a bunch of liars.
You are a liar.
Yeah. So yeah, just and that was the thing. It's not like just Russians, like people like all over were like, no, that's me. Like,
well,
no, you're
crazy. We still have unfortunate people. Well, fortunate for those that having false claims made against them. Unfortunate for the scammers and schemers out there. But you still, even into the 20th and maybe even 21st century, have people claiming to be someone that they're not, but DNA, of course, can identify for a fact whether or not you have any relation. So, it's a fun show. We tried out Cowboy Bebop live action. Actually enjoyed the first episode for what it was. Completely different than the anime, but not in a bad way, unless you were wanting to see the anime translated, you know, frame by frame.
Yeah, but that's hard to do.
Yeah, it hasn't worked ever in anime, and transcribing over into live action. And I know a lot of people are like, oh, well, just let the Japanese do it. Guys, go watch the Attack on Titan movies. You don't want the Japanese to do live action anime any more than you want America doing it.
Yeah, it's just like it's like translating a language. There's going to be things that are lost in translation, some things that just don't actually translate, so you'll have to try to figure a way to do it differently, and that's okay. Yeah. And if you didn't like the live action Cowboy Bebop, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean it's not for everyone. It's been fine, like I said, for what they've done with it. But if you were, if you were hoping for more true to form, they embrace the story as far as the general's story, but they embrace the quirky weirdness of Cowboy Bebop instead of trying to find a nice balance between the fantastical elements and the, you know, traditional like Western flow of the story in the anime. I like it, but we've only seen one episode, so.
Yeah, again, yeah,
we'll have busy. To get back into it. Busy, which is why the daily cup of genre hasn't been as daily as I wish it could be. Yes. But our home lives, there's been more appointments, but a lot of other things are, kind of settling down. Tuesday and Thursday mornings are going to be
rough.
Odd, because our son has an occupational therapy, very, very important. But we'll figure it out.
Maybe just do it later.
Maybe later. Potentially even looking at some pre-recording and maybe even trying to get more like guest interview segments and putting those up as, you know, shows. So we're gonna work on it, guys. We want to get you as much content as we possibly can. Mostly because this is all I can do. This is my job. But it's also my like life, if you will, is getting to watch stuff or play things and then talk about it. You know. Yeah.
And this is so much fun. So it's exactly. I was excited this morning. I was like, hey, we get to do this.
We want to, and trust me, whenever we don't, there's good reason, either scheduling or legit needing a day to reset from all the other stuff going on. But we're gonna do our best. So
yes,
one of the big things that I am always like begging people to pay attention to is, you know, the movies and the movie tickets, and I'm happy this morning to have seen some reports on Spider-Man No Way Home ticket sales, which Christine actually wrote a story the other day, and I'll bring that up in a little bit. But according to Deadline is the one that I brought up, and there's been additional sources, people reporting on this. I'm not sure which insider numbers they get from, because I have to go to the numbers.com, but anyways, Spider-Man No Way Home pre-sales for the first day pre-sales have exceeded everything since Endgame. Okay, now with a little bit of context, let's think about what came out after Endgame. You have Spider-Man Far From Home. This outperforming Far From Home is a good sign. I like that. Generally, third movies in a trilogy should outsell the second one. I'm looking at you, Rise of Skywalker. Anyways, what came out after Far From Home? The Rise of Skywalker, the first Star Wars third movie in the third trilogy to make less money than its predecessor, the second film, always Attack of the Clones made less than Revenge, and Empire made less than Return of the Jedi.
Even though Empire's better.
Empire's great, but Return of the Jedi is fucking underrated. Go and check out the Cantina reviews on the Return of the Jedi. Like a 3-hour conversation about how underrated and how some of the most amazing Star Wars moments come from Jedi. Fuck. But that movie, it had baggage from The Last Jedi. The fandom was very, very split. So seeing it outperform that is not really that unexpected, honestly. But like I said, it's a good thing. I want this to do well. While I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of what I know of this movie, I'm still waiting to see how it lands, how it's executed. Regardless, I've wanted this movie to make money. I wanted you guys to prove me wrong that you're not willing to wait. Unfortunately, we have a new variant going around the world. Some media are reporting on the doctor that first sequenced the Omicron variant. I forget her name, but some are talking and she had said, you know, hey, we haven't seen spikes in hospitalizations yet. It's still early. It was like found on November 11th or some shit, like a couple weeks ago. But others are hyping up, oh God, it could be so infectious and not necessarily giving full context out there. So I'm still concerned. You and I looked at the seatings and availability. Like most people that had issues getting tickets was because of like app issues, you know, not selling out. There were certain premium experiences, premium theaters at a, you know, the prime time, the 7 p.m. showing. Everyone's out of school, everyone's off of work. Those were hard to find, but there's still seats available for the 3:30 p.m. Thursday showing at our theater, which is the theater for our city and the biggest theater in the area, the IMAX out in Virginia Beach. They still had a lot of tickets available for everything except the 7 p.m. Thursday show. But it's doing good. It's outperforming a lot of people, and some are expecting it to be above the well above 100 million. I saw someone, I think it was a Screen Rant article, said that someone told them they could see it push 200. Temper your expectations because we have the Omicron variant. A lot of people buying pre-sales for that first day, but remember, guys, you have the whole weekend to count. This does need to break 100 million. I now have a little bit more faith that it will, 100 million domestic. It's a good sign, but let's not beat around the bush.
Yeah.
This is still a small number compared to what it both could and should be.
Yeah.
I mean... You think of Endgame bringing in, you know, 300 million. This is like an Endgame of Spider-Man, so to speak. We'll get to that in a bit. But this should have easily been pushing 200 million without a thought. Like easy $200 million American or North American domestic. How do you kind of feel about seeing that, yeah, that this is actually getting some lazy I'll wait bastards out their house?
That's nice. You know, sometimes looking at the same four walls will drive you crazy. So, you know, if you're a person who loves going to the movies, definitely go if you've got the money and you want to, and yeah, get out. It's cool.
Yeah,
it's great.
I guess we'll have to see what happens with it. Like I said, guys, temper your expectations over hearing this. And I'm not saying like it's going to be bad or not get better. I'm just saying there's still a lot of stuff going on. Media is playing things the way media does, for ad revenue, clicks and viewers. Same things that we do, only we're playing with entertainment news, not life and death. So, but like Christine said, guys, if this is a movie you want to see and you're able to, get out there. If it's literally, if you are a healthy person and it's literally just that uncomfortableness caused by the last couple of years, use this as potentially with, you know, support of friends, family, behavioral health, docs, whatever. Maybe look at this as your first step back towards normalcy, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, I mean, it's been strange, especially, like, I saw a video recently of a man filming another man who had, like, multiple masks on and was getting on to him for taking a picture of his daughter for not wearing a mask. And it's like, that's creepy, dude. Why did you do that? Like, you
know, he might have other issues as well, which is why I pointed out, you know, hey, if you're being treated for it, isolation or whatnot, you know,
but don't take pictures of children.
Yeah, don't do
that's
that.
That's not.
Don't.
Yeah, but some people are still scared.
Yeah, and it's under, like I said, man, the media plays up the fear because they want people glued to the TV. So it's like when you bury the lead, you know, it's like, oh my God, shocking report, yada yada yada. However, this report comes from a source that isn't necessarily the most reliable. But oh my goodness, could you imagine if it is? So you read all this stuff as if it is. Most people only read headlines, maybe the first paragraph, sheriff's story, and before you know it, now you've got a monster. Anywho, speaking of monsters, there are a bunch of monsters out there known as scalpers. And yes. Christine got to write a bit about some Spider-Man No Way Home scalpers, like I was mentioning earlier, with the ones that like premium screens and stuff. So what'd you find out, Christine? How are the assholes ruining movies now?
Snatching up those preview night tickets. I even put that in quotes because it's like they have 7 p.m. and then they had like a 3 something. But yeah, like people snatching them up, selling them for god awful prices,
extreme numbers. Yeah,
but it's like, you know, with there was still, like, when I was writing this article, there was still seating in our area for, you know, just like the regular theater instead of it being like an IMAX or anything like that. So it was like, you know, maybe see it, you know, in a premium theater next time. But, you know, if you want to see it, you know, and don't want anything spoiled, you know, that's a way to do it. If you want, you spend your money how you want, that's fine. But I mean, this is $24,000 on eBay.
You know, it's crazy because, I mean, like I said, it's not hard to get tickets, guys. There's no shortage of screens and seats available.
You guys got the next day or
exactly.
Something.
You guys got to think about what I just said. This movie should have easily, if COVID never happened, this should have been pushing $200 million opening easy, and that means if it's still gonna open in 4,000 plus screens, okay, or, you know, 3,700 to 4,000 screens, and it's only doing maybe half of what it could have potentially done, that means there's plenty of tickets left. It might not be for the showing you initially wanted, but is waiting a couple of hours going in earlier, or waiting one more day, is that worth $1,000? I mean, to
considering
some?
That, yeah, okay, yeah. If, I mean, you spend your money how you want. That's fine.
Oh yeah,
but it's just still kind of like
you do it, but
you're still giving money to
awful people.
Yeah.
That's the bad part of it. Is
yes,
the scalper aspect, not. Like I said, I'm the.
I want you to suffer.
Yeah, I'm the laissez-faire capitalist pig. You know, I'm all about people getting their money, but it's the
sketchy ways. It's just kind of like, I don't
don't support bad habits. Don't enable. You know, the market can regulate itself if people don't enable it. The worst part about it is when you get things like Walmart and Best Buy having these premium marketplaces where they can sell their own scalped PlayStations and things like that and taking cuts. It's just ugh. That type of enabling is what infuriates me. But this, the good thing is this isn't hurting anyone.
Yeah, and it's not like
even it's just crazy.
Yeah, even if like the scalpers don't sell the tickets. I mean, they're not out too much.
Yeah.
But like with like the consoles and the Xbox fridge that. You know, if you've bought a whole bunch of them, that will hurt you financially having to put it as used and give it to, like, GameStop or something. But, yeah, like, just, I don't know, this, it's so wrong.
It's like I said, at least this isn't hurting anyone. You're not being affected by not being able to get Spider-Man No Way Home tickets Thursday or Friday. Like literally, guys, as far as I know, you can still get to, it might not be for the fancy RPX or IMAX, but you can still get tickets, and then the next day, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, all guys, they're widely available. Mute Twitter and Facebook, Instagram for a couple of days. That'll probably do us all some good as well.
And it's hard, but you know, it's just we've waited this long. You can wait.
Yeah. It's cool. Our advertisers, our sponsors, there's the word. They've waited long enough for this ad to come from Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. I know, right?
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. For all of your cultivation needs, Grow Generation has the right products, service, and staff to make your grow successful. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
I hit it a little fast, I think. I may have cut out someone's voice. Sorry if I did. Thank you, Grow Generation, for sponsoring the show as usual, guys. Link in the description box and growgeneration.com. Guys, before I go back over to Spider-Man news, let me bring up one last bit of
numbers.
No, numbers. All right. Just real quick. Okay. The weekend numbers were decent for Ghostbusters Afterlife in its first weekend back, a 45% drop, which is way less than what we've seen for a lot of others. And that is facing off against Disney's Encanto, but I think that may have also hit Disney Plus at the same time. Don't quote me on that. I'm not 100%. Also facing House of Gucci, it's going to be one of those targeted artsy type films, which is fine. I'm not knocking it at all. So considering that, still pulling in for 45 is a solid drop. That's good. Bravo, Afterlife and Afterlife fans. It's still going to be really hard for it to break that $120 million kind of like averaging zone, 120 to 170 for some of these bigger films like both Black Widow and Shang-Chi, and even Eternal sitting at 150 right now. I don't see Ghostbusters Afterlife breaking that. You know, if it has another good drop this week and say 50%, you're eking right close to 100 million, depending on what it makes during the weekday. But then you guys got to think the following weekend is Spider-Man No Way Home, and that's going to take all the monies, however little it is contextually. But bravo to it, guys. That's good. You guys went out and supported the film a little bit more. I'm betting there's a lot of repeat viewers based on some of the Facebook groups I belong to. So yeah, Christine, my favorite movie Spider-Man is Tom Holland. Who's your favorite movie Spider-Man?
Tom Holland.
Why is that, Christine?
Because he's the best of both. I mean, of Peter Parker and Spider-Man.
Do you mean to tell me that Andrew Garfield's Peter Parker is like the absolute worst Peter Parker ever?
It's too cool. That makes sense.
Are you saying that Raimi's Spider-Man didn't do enough Spider-Manning?
Correct.
Oh my goodness! It's almost like we're compatible. that would explain the last almost what 16 years now, 17.
Although there's some things that we do differ, but absolutely. Yeah. And I was actually talking about his Spider-Man movies, mm-hmm. the three, because I just did the Bruce Campbell piece that I did, and he was in all three of those.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In small roles.
Yep. I love Bruce Campbell. Oh, that guy. But yeah, so one of the things that I've been wanting, the reason why I bring up, you know, Spider-Man is the fact that we are about to we've gotten word that we're going to get more Tom Holland's Spider-Man. Amy Pascal, I do not like her past. I think she's done awful things. However, she finally did do one thing that I absolutely applauded her for. She admitted that they gave you guys crap in the last few, whether she means the last two or the last Spider-Man 3 through Amazing 2. I know fans are out there, but she said that they weren't giving you guys good stuff. They were going places that they shouldn't have, and it was Feige coming in and telling her that Amazing 3 would fail miserably, that got us to where we are. So she said in an interview with Fandango, can I say something about that, when they're talking about Spider-Man and Marvel and Sony. This is not the last movie that we were going to make with Marvel. Christine and I talked about that a while ago. You can expect a Spider-Man and Venom movie is what most people are thinking, and then something else. Kraven is the one that most people think the other is, but there were two production movies for the 23 release dates for Marvel and Sony. So that's what we think. So, anyways, this is not the last movie that we are going to make with Marvel. This is not the last Spider-Man movie. We are getting ready to make the next Spider-Man movie with Tom Holland and Marvel. It just isn't part of, we're thinking of this as three films, and now we're going to go on to the next three. This is not our last of our MCU movies. Yes, Marvel and Sony are going to keep going together as partners.
Yay! I like that. Thank you.
Still stand by based on the evidence of what we're seeing forward. We're going to see Spider-Man playing more with Sony's characters, more Spider-Man characters than we'll see him with MCU Prime characters, if you will. But that's still good. Marvel's going to have their thumb on Avi Arad and Amy and Vince Acara and Fox and all the whoever else is the dumbasses left over at Sony. Oh, we've got Kevin's playbook. We can do it. Yeah. What happened, guys? 2019, you were ready to take your ball and go home. You're not taking your ball anywhere now, are you? Fucking assholes. Anyways, bravo, Amy Pascal on that. I will take Kevin Feige at his word when he said that for him and her, it was never about money. It was always about the movies. The story. She obviously had no good eye for stories without Marvel around, and that might be because of some of the other names talking at her. I don't know, but bravo, Amy Pascal, for admitting where your studio went wrong, and for making a better choice for the fans and for your company. Because honestly, you guys would have never made the money you have made and will make without Marvel Studios. It wouldn't have happened. It wasn't going to fucking happen. Anyways, Christine, how do you feel about it? And the fact that hopefully this means we're going to get college fucking Peter, like
yes,
adult Peter Parker in the future.
We need to move on from high school. There was someone who, I think they had commented on my article. Mm-hmm. Or no, I think I had said it. No, yeah, I said it. I was talking about watching My Senpai is Annoying, and mm-hmm. how great it is that it's outside of high school. and I know I'm not the only one to have said it, but like I feel the same way. It's like it's always high school stories, and here with Spider-Man, it's the same. Not just with anime, and it's like he's done other things.
Yeah,
you know, if you go look at the comic books, if you go look on the internet, and make it where it's like your cheat sheet, like your Cliff Notes, and just look it up and. Old reference. we're old. Yeah, like just with there's more to all of this, and like with the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies, like they did a little college,
yeah,
which is nice, but it's like I want to see more of that.
Yeah,
see him grow, see him do other things. Hopefully, see females not falling.
Well, you're going to see some females falling in this next movie.
I know. Ugh. So annoying.
At least this time you don't know whether or not she's going to die.
I doubt
it as well.
But still.
I happen to agree, and there was something that before after Ghostbusters Afterlife came out that I kept screaming, why do grown-ups want to watch kids? Like, and I don't mean it in a pervy way, okay? I'm being legit, like, things with, like, It and Stranger Things and Ghostbusters Afterlife, right? You got all of these things that are for, you know, teens and adults, some of them rated, you know, PG-13, some rated, I think, Stranger Things is mature, maybe not, I'm not sure.
Well, I mean, I think Stranger Things, it's not just about the kids, right. So it makes it you
but
know,
it's
for everyone.
Still, but that's, and I get some of those, it's going for that nostalgia things. Two of those things that I mentioned are set in the 80s. One of them, Ghostbusters Afterlife, just took all the images and names from the 80s property and did a Stranger Things episode with it. Or X-Files episode, X-Files Light, if you will. But I don't get how it's become the norm. Like, it's okay to do, like I said, a nostalgia piece, but now you're literally setting something to today, modern time and age, and you're doing it and making these grown-ups be like, man, it's great to go watch. And not all of them have kids. Our kid really didn't care too much about Lucky and Phoebe, you know? He's like, oh, the podcast guy, and oh, the old Ghostbusters, you know? And, but with the youth of today, it's all self-insertion. That's why all of these movies today, the kids are absolute OP of the mind. They're all geniuses. They're all perfect. They can make and break all the rules that they want. Every kid gets to live their dream. They face no real adversity, no real challenges. Everything tidied up in a nice little bow at the end. And even if you have a bad kid villain or a young adult villain, that villain usually becomes good by the end of it, because you can't have any bad ones out there, especially females. There is a problem in movies right now where everything is made to tell adults to be more kid-like, while when I was, and to tell kids it's fine the way you are. But I remember being a kid and watching my movies and growing up, and it was always about, man, I can't wait to grow up, being an adult, to be able to do the adult things with my own spin on it, of course. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, you should always grow into the last generation. No. We should always be striving to make things better. But, man, I'm 37 years old. I want to watch people behave like adults, you know what I'm saying? Like, here I have a platform, I do the things for entertainment value, but
I don't know that Afterlife had a little bit of that. I mean, you were talking, you know, comparing it to Stranger Things. With Stranger Things, you got the kids, you've got the teens that become adults, and then you've got the adults. So you know, you've got everyone, and you get to see all of that. They had a little bit of that with I don't think they executed it perfectly, but they had that with Afterlife, where, you know, that whole like starting to date as an adult. With Phoebe's character, I mean, yeah, there's a lot that she can do, but you know, you still see the flaws of it's hard to relate to other people when you're this type of person.
I know, but
you know, with Finn, he what's his character?
Trevor.
Okay. With his character, you know, it's trying to fit in to be popular. He didn't have anything special going on, you know, anything fantastical. So, I mean, there was at least that.
His biggest challenge was that he was 15, not 16. That was his big challenge. He was able to fix the car, no problem. Phoebe gets all...
Well, I mean, there are 15, 16-year-olds that can do that.
Hold on.
Okay.
The mom is a mess. She can't keep the kids cared for. She makes all sorts of terrible decisions, treats her daughter like crap, does nothing but bitch moaning. She's infantilized or however.
And there are some parents that are like that.
Absolutely. Paul Rudd, same thing. He's nothing but a goofy fanboy. Ghostbusters makes the mistake of opening a ghost trap, which he's supposed to be a scientist. And if he knew about the Ghostbusters and saw that this thing was, he wouldn't
okay,
have
you're right about
opened
that
it
one.
Up like,
but,
like that.
Yeah.
The dad is confronted with all this weird equipment and he's just going to let the mom will walk off. The adults are dumb. In Stranger Things, all of the adults consistently make the worst mistakes and pay the highest prices for those mistakes. With the teenagers making some good, some bad, sometimes getting away with it, sometimes not. Like when I can't remember their names, but the two teens working at the ice cream shop get caught by the Russians.
Robin
in season 3.
And Steve.
There you go. But the kids always the kids are right. The kids make it. The kids do it. The kids get away. They bend the rules, break the rules. They are perfect. Sure, they might get a little scraped and bruised like Ray did in the sequel trilogy, but at the end of the day, all the older people were batshit nuts making dumb decisions while Ray and that's what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And so everything is written that way. And I'm not going to lie. I'm tired of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got a point there. Yeah. With the adult part, with the kid part, a little bit. I kind of do wish that, you know, it wouldn't be too much of we know what's best as kids. But I mean, there is still some like... Where they're not a Mary Sue,
yeah,
you know.
Oh, absolutely. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to the what the boomers and Gen X did to us millennials and Gen Zers, as far as the coddling, everything.
You can be whatever
everything's
you want
positive.
To be.
And when life didn't turn out that way, a lot of people became creative. But now. To borrow from anime, every fucking thing is an isekai in disguise with the fucking power fantasy shit going on. Everything is. It's all self-insertion. And even if it's not self-insertion, because it'll be like, oh, well, I'm sure J.J. Abrams and Chris Terrio, I think he wrote on Force Awakens or whoever, they definitely didn't sell. Guys, they're not the only ones involved in the writing processes. Everyone's been told or heard of the writers' rooms and character development and things like that. And there are, Hollywood kind of soft quotas, if you will, for certain character types, both aesthetics and personality. Aesthetics meaning things like race and gender, and things like personality meaning personality all encompassing from their love life to are they fun or are they dour, those types of things. There are certain, like I said, soft quotas that you hear about from studios. You got to have X amount of this, X amount of that. And a lot of that is to help bring certain, you know, disenfranchised groups into light. But oftentimes it comes at the expense of the story because you're trying to figure out, well, you want this group, whatever group it could be, it could even be straight white males. You want to have this straight white male in this group, but it doesn't work for this group. It doesn't work for this setting for whatever reason. Or it could be any
where it feels like an insertion instead of feeling like
exactly.
an organic story.
So even when it's not necessarily direct, the writer Kyle Malone inserting himself into a story, I might be told you need to work in this character. And that character is very, very likely a self-insertion from somewhere else in the writing room, story room, the studio head, you know, going, well, by golly, George, X studio is doing this. Us as Y studio gotta do the same.
Yeah, and I could see where that can actually be really damaging, because there are some Gen Zers, and I'm not going to say all, because it's not true, some of them where, you know, you'll see comments online on certain things where it's just always that, okay, boomer, and it's like, why did that become a thing? You know, it just doesn't make sense, because, like, you know, it's a specific generation, but you're calling someone who's a few years older just weird, and it's like, you're not always right. And and yeah, like, I can't even remember where I saw it. I just remember the situation where someone had tried to put in a point in a comment section in YouTube, and then that person just said, okay, boomer, and I was like, but they're right. So and they weren't even like getting nasty or anything. They're just like, oh, here's my comment, and then just all of a sudden someone, you know, lashing out, and it's turning
a millennial or some shit.
Yeah,
not even,
and
or
we
Gen
had
X.
Not too long ago, a bit. It feels long ago, but you know, where it's like, oh, skinny jeans are out, you know, or you know, you can't wear this, you can't
low
wear
rise,
that,
or
and
low
it's like
waist hip hugging, all that went away.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, where every generation has something to offer. We were talking to
Jason Stewart.
Yep. Thank you. I was like, what was the first name? Stewart. Jason Stewart. We were talking to him about that, where, you know, everyone, every generation has something to offer. They've lived a certain, you know, point in time, and, you know, we can all learn from each other. You can learn from youth. You can learn from your elders. But yeah, it was just kind of like, that is turning into like a thing to where people who are younger are thinking they know better than everyone else, and then you've got people who are older who are doing the same thing, and for me it's just kind of like, why are y'all doing that? I mean, like, everyone wants to look down, it seems like, and it's been going on for a long time. Like, they'll look down at other generations. Mm-hmm. And it
used to be you blamed the group before you and cursed the group coming after you because they just weren't going through the same things. And that cycle continued and continued up until Gen X and millennials, where you get a lot of many generations because of the way technology leapt, because of the high rate of teen pregnancy that all of a sudden just hit a brick wall and dropped. And I know it's a big conversation that's not for here. I'm not saying no one knows why it dropped dramatically, but and that meant that you didn't necessarily have, you know, Gen X's raising millennials at 16 years old. So they were basically coming up almost as old millennials themselves. When you get to that era of change, we start getting this extended adolescence to where people
annoying.
Are not hitting the age of maturity, of mature thinking, because of the lack of life experiences, all the protection that our parents offered us, that society offered us, because it could, whether that's via safety equipment, more knowledge about how important seatbelts or cutting down sugars are. Like, there's a lot of good that came from it, but there's also been a lot of harm, because all of a sudden you got a group of people that are learning life experiences later.
Which, and on their own,
right? And which means that they handle it differently, and then they don't necessarily make the choices that they would have during the first, you know, 5 years of adulthood, versus the choices that our, you know, older cousins, maybe some of our you know, older millennials, and then our parents' generation, like. Mm-hmm. You make bad decisions longer, and that kind of goes into this right now. You've got a lot of people 30 and younger that are just so happy to hold on to their fleeting youth, which for a lot of them just ended 5 years ago. I feel like my youth days were done 22, 21 years old. By the time I came back from Iraq, I'm a grown ass adult, right?
Yeah.
So my youth is long gone, and that's, you know, 20, 21 years old, 22 years old is where a lot of people are reaching for. I know about brain development in 25 and whatnot, but that's where you're reaching. You've gone through some shit. You've made some choices, education. You're living now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, people aren't getting to that step until 25, 26.
Yeah, and part of that is choices made and economy as well.
It's
so it's like it's everything throwing against those younger, and
but it doesn't,
and it kind of sucks also.
Doesn't absolve them of bad choices.
Yeah, so I kind of feel bad for the younger generation as well, because like a long time ago, like people were making fun, like older people were making fun of younger people for not being able to do basic skills, and it's like, who raised them?
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Who did that?
I've been saying for a long time. I look at my dad.
It's a reflection on you.
Yeah, I look at my dad, the baby boomers, and I'm like, yeah. you fucked us with this. But not your fault. You were told by doctors and psychiatrists and teachers and sociologists.
Buying books on it.
You got to coddle this, protect that, positive this, positive that, and you. You raise an entire generation with no resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time they get resiliency, they write a fucking isekai character and pop it into the latest movie. I had to wrap it back to entertainment somehow.
Yeah, we were
but
going
deep. No, it does. And you can see the direct line and the age of writers as the Gen Xers and millennials are now in those, you know, key offices, key positions, and a lot more millennials. And now you're seeing some Gen Zers are in the entry level writing room and story room and filmmaking and whatnot. You can draw that straight line all the way to Ghostbusters Afterlife, which actually you can even draw that line right back to like the Force Awakens and that really kicking off the whole why put in any effort. Just go for the lowest hanging fruit. And that's not me saying that these are all bad movies, but I am kind of getting tired of it. And I realize I just left this whole time we've been talking the Spider-Man thing up. Sorry about that guys. Man, that's like 30 minutes staring at a tiny picture. I really apologize. Christine, watch the studio screen better now.
No one wants to see your face.
They really don't. So yeah, we went all over the place, guys. But basically, it is a complicated situation, but we're getting to the point where nothing's changing. It's getting fucking bland. The only thing I really care to watch, like brand new stuff, is like anime or something just off the wall, like a the Great, you know,
mm-hmm.
like that. That's off the wall. There's no kids involved to do things. And the past, I already look at them as less intelligent due to the, you know, 18th century. So I can excuse infantile behavior, you know, because it fits. But I would like to get the next Die Hard. I'd like to get the next Fight Club. I'd like to get the next Full Metal Jackets, the next Saving Private Ryan. I'm ready to go back to adulthood in a few movies every now and then, and let the nostalgia and living vicariously through film, you know, teen action movie or whatever
or throwing in silly stuff.
Yeah, and, it's yeah. I that
because even
be,
like with Venom, they did that.
Yeah, that should cute, be a visit. But, I should go. I want to go live vicariously through this action movie with Spider-Man and that's yeah, man. I remember being a geek and being picked on. I would have loved to have had powers. Okay, I'm good. I got it. I'm done. I'm set to go back to adulthood, which means I'll be watching anime.
Yeah.
Anyways, guys, thank you so much for tuning in and sticking with the Genreverse Podcast Network. Because while the Daily Cog might not always be daily right now, we are still getting out the all the other all the other great shows like Anime Versal Reviews, the Cantina, Dragon Review, Breaking Geek Radio, and we're gonna have some more things kicking off soon, including No Mercy coming back at the end of the year, Marvel Multiverse Mayhem covering Hawkeye and Spider-Man Homecoming this week, Far From Home next week, and then immediately the Spider-Man No Way Home. And so be sure you're following us on your favorite app or subscribe to the LRM YouTube channel. All of our celebrity interviews, red carpet, Zoom, in person type stuff, all go up there. And LRMonline.com and genreverse.com. Social media information down below. Christine, you got anything you want to say?
Yeah. I wrote an article on the Marvelous Miss Maisel teaser for season 4 coming out. And I finally got off my ass and watched the first episode of season 1, and I love it. So still looking forward to watching more, and I'm looking forward to February when season 4 comes out.
There you go. All right, guys. I guess that'll do it for us today. Hopefully we'll see you tomorrow. Bye.